brought to you by the Georgia Governor's Office of Highway Safety, reminding you to buckle up, Georgia.
You know, I've always been the put your nose to the ground and keep on holding until the row is done.
Would you give credit to those coaches, or what brought so much attention to your players?
I give credit to the kids.
I mean, look, we got Matt riled up.
I'm riled up.
Welcome to another round of the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast, off-season edition. John here, Hannah there.
And
Matt is joining us off the top because of our main subject matter. But you had something, Hannah, that you wanted to discuss quickly?
Yes. The Super Bowl
was
Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Hope everybody enjoyed the wonderful game. I mean, it wasn't that great of a game.
No, I didn't. I watched it.
Seattle Seahawks beat the New England Patriots 29-13, and we wanted to give a shout out to some of the Seahawks who were on the active roster during the game. Jared Ivey from North Gwinnett, Ernest Jones from Ware County, and the head coach, Mike McDonald, was a Centennial grad. So all grads of GHSA programs, and on the practice squad, Chris Paul Jr. from Crisp County and Ricky White from Marietta. So congratulations to our Super Bowl champs from Georgia.
Well, and Matt, we also had two Tucker guys who were coaches in Nico Thorpe and Thomas Brown that were in the Roman numeral classic too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tremendous. Just continues to back up the fact that the best high school football is in the state of Georgia. So, you know, I mean, it's not the first time we've had this before. Of course, Sean McVay from Marist, and just plenty of examples of guys who've played high school football or coached high school football in the state of Georgia who've gone on to win the big game.
Reason that we brought you in this time is our main topic this go-round is National Signing Day, and specifically National Signing Day Classic. And what happened last week, it almost snuck up on us. It's like, oh, by the way, it's National Signing Day because of what happens now in December.
It's like barely on social media.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's National Signing Day. Whoops.
Yeah. And so it's...
Well, it's an afterthought. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this in the future, because obviously all the big-time prospects, you know, end up signing that first Wednesday in December. And then programs go through the transfer portal, as it is right now, in the month of January. And then after they fill needs through the transfer portal, then they focus on any remaining high school football players. It's almost like the Rule 5 draft.
Baseball.
In Major League Baseball, no one really pays it any attention until one of those Rule 5 players ends up making your roster and becoming an actual contributor to your organization. So, you know, I don't know if that's quite the appropriate analogy right there, but the bottom line is most of these guys are guys that were waiting there because of, you know, three-star status or no-star status or whatever you want to call it. Not that that's important, but that's kind of the reality of the situation is these are not your big-time prospects.
Well, it's like trickle-down economics, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody in December fills out their FBS, their FCS, their Christmas lists. Then that gets done, and then... And we have Joey King coming on after you, and I wanted to kind of get the opinion of a coach who's been at the college level and the high school level about how nimble you and your staffs have to be after December, trying to find homes for those other guys that you know are FCS or, you know, Group of Five or whatever. So you've got to be more nimble these days, come what we see in February.
Yeah, you got to be patient. You really do. The players have to be patient. It's not going to materialize the way they perhaps envisioned that it would. And the other aspect of this situation is, you know, these places where they're signing, a lot of these players are signing with the idea that I'm going to go there for a couple of years and produce, and then I'm going to jump in the transfer portal and try to move up the ladder. I mean, that's kind of the reality of the situation now with a lot of these players, and not just these players that are signing in the second or the classic National Signing Day period, as you referred to it, but also those who sign in the first signing day period.
Is that a positive or a negative? Do you have players who are getting a shot and getting to redevelop and then go on in the transfer portal, or are you having really, really talented players having to go the smaller schools. What's your take on it, Matt?
Yeah, my take on it is, I'm just picking a word out of what you just used right there. I don't know that there's any development going on. I think that's the, part of the real problem, and I think high school coaches would probably echo that. A lot of coaches tell them, we don't want players that we have to develop and turn into players. We want players who are ready to go right now. We don't have time to develop them. And college coaches are kind of stuck in that bind right there is, I don't have time to develop a player because by the time I develop that player, he's going to jump in the transfer portal and all the hard work I put into that player is going to end up going to somebody else. So I think that's probably what we're seeing right here. Is it a good thing for players? I think... You know, like I think like any argument, there's two sides to the story. I don't know that it's a bad thing for players, players' movements. They get a chance to jump to a program where they might get to play more. And we see this, you know, with a guy like C.J. Daniels, the former Parkview star wide receiver who actually started out his career at Liberty, jumped to LSU, and then spent this past season playing for Miami, which played for the national championship. And he played a huge role in the Miami Hurricane season. So, I mean, the player movement can be good for the player, that's for sure. I don't know what that means for us. I don't know what that means for players as far as development, because typically development correlates with, you know, longevity within a program you're developing as a player. I don't know that players are truly developing as much as they used to, and I certainly don't think that academically it's a good thing for any of these players, if anybody's even concerned about that anymore, which, you know, my take on that is I don't think the NCAA really gives a rip about that anymore. They've dropped the pretense of, you know, they call them student athletes, but they don't really care whether they're going to class anymore or not.
Well, they sure used to when I was.
They used to. They don't
SEC
anymore.
SEC Sports.
When's the last time you heard of a player being ineligible to play because of grades?
It's been a while, Matt. So does that forever. Put more pressure on these JUCO and smaller teams? Are they the developers now? How is all of that working? So the bigger schools, they want developed players, and then they're coming from the smaller schools. So now the smaller schools are the developers?
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's ever changed. They were always that. But, I mean, I think what happens now is they develop and they lose.
Yes.
So that's what you see. I mean, it used to be they would develop and those players played there, you know, unless they, you know, spent 4 years there and graduated and then had an opportunity to move up, which still does happen sometimes. But, you know, they develop and they lose. They lose those players. And I think, you know, I think they're settling into the reality that that's their life. That's their lot in life. Okay. They're a farm system for the big programs.
So then I was trying to think of a parallel, and this was the first one that popped into my head. When college basketball had the one and dones, and you had John Calipari.
And everyone would get so mad.
Right. And so John Calipari at UK, I think, was the first one to kind of grasp the idea of, okay, I know you're going to be here for a year. We're going to max it out. We're going to get you ready for the next level or the next whatever.
Yes.
I'm okay. I'm okay with this.
Yes.
And for the longest time, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke was, nuh-uh, I'm not going to do it. You're going to be here for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years.
And if you're not going to be, you're going to be punished and penalized.
And so if you're not into that, then you're not going to come to Duke. And so that might have hurt Duke a little bit in the grand scheme of things, but now...
Until they started doing it.
Right. They learned that this is the way that it's going to be and it's not going to change. And so I think that the developer schools, or even these days at the, you know, the FBS schools, those college coaches that understand I may have this player only for a year, and those college coaches that can develop quicker will be the ones that will be more successful regardless of where you are, whether you're FCS or Group of Five or Power Four. Those faster developing coaches will be the ones that will be more successful.
I don't know that they're developing. I think they're just taking players and they're plug and play. Here's our system. Do you fit in our system? We plug you in and you play and you star right away. I think the funny thing that's happened in basketball, funny in that it's ironic, is we went from this time of one and done to now we're in this time of seven and stay. I mean, guys played for 7 years because of NIL. You're seeing it now. We've already seen two examples, actually maybe more than two, three examples of players who have actually played professional basketball and now through the courts have gone back and gotten injunctions to defeat the NCAA or at least defeat them temporarily long enough for them to go back and play. Charles Bediako at Alabama is probably the most was the first example, a guy who played in the G League. But now you've got a guy, I forget his name now, But he's actually played 10 games in the NBA, and he's suing to try to get back into college basketball.
My head hurts.
Yeah, they're making more money.
But it's because they're making more. They'll make Hannah's exactly right. They're going to make more money. They're going to make more money playing college basketball. You got guys playing college football and college basketball, since those are the two biggest sports when it comes to, you know, talking about the money in the game, that they realize, I'm not going to be an NFL player. I'm not going to be an NBA player either. And so better to maximize my time in college and stay playing college basketball or college football as long as I can to maximize my earning potential. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing that we're going to see, and I think there's already been movement in that direction, and I think we're going to see more of that, is we're going to see challenges in the courts that will challenge the whole notion of what, who says I can only have to play, I can only play 4 or 5 years of college football. You're limiting my earning potential. Who says there's limits to eligibility in college sports? Whoever came up with that idea?
Wow.
Just,
you know,
forever.
The NCAA, of course.
They could just play,
I think,
forever.
That, I think, and they'll play for, you know, we'll see guys stay in until the, if they win, they'll stay until they're 31, 32 years old playing college sports, because that's where they're going to earn the money. They're not going to make money playing in the NBA or the NFL. I think that's going to be the next challenge. I think that's why you keep hearing colleges talking about they want Congress, of all people. And I never think it's a good thing when Congress gets involved with this stuff. But they do. They want relief. Okay. They want an antitrust exemption. So, because what keeps happening without that, they just keep getting you know, picked off, like these players are like, you know, sharpshooters up on a hill, and they just keep picking them off. They just take them one time, you know, one case at a time, picking them off and getting beat in court. And the NCAA has no authority anymore. They do have authority, but it keeps getting defeated in the courts. And when that happens, it all becomes, kind of the equivalent of a class action lawsuit. So that, you know, you saw that with Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia won in court, you know, to keep his JUCO experience from counting against him as far as his NCAA football experience. And so he got that extra year. And so while Pavia won, that means everybody won, because now you got the Pavia rule. So everybody, anybody who played JUCO, they could have played 2 or 3 years in JUCO, and it doesn't count against their NCAA eligibility anymore.
John, Hannah, Matt, there's a silver lining, man. Yeah, but there is a silver lining. The silver lining is when Will Ferrell produces a movie where he's 47 years old.
He can play.
And he's playing in junior college and still doing all the NIL commercials. It'll make a fantastic script.
I really don't see them doing that, though.
I just realized, Matt, I just realized when you were breaking it all down that we're going to have,
John, well, do you want to play?
You don't want a left. You don't want a lefty, sinewy wide receiver at the age of 39 repeating. A restraint of trade argument in the courts, which is what we're going to be getting from all of these athletes. In each individual case, you could have restraint of trade.
Right.
If you're not allowed to go back to work.
But they're still shutting it down in football. I mean, just look at Ole Miss.
Hey.
So.
I mean, we got Matt riled up.
I'm riled up.
Yeah, you're talking about the quarterback. I mean.
Trinidad Chambliss, yeah.
I know that. Yeah, he has not been successful so far in the courts. So I'm not, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of his. I mean, I know I know what they're trying to do, but I don't know why they have not been successful in the courts. So they'll just keep trying until they find the right judge. You know, just like the Bediako case. You know, they filed in Tuscaloosa Superior Court, and of course the judge,
judge.
Friendly judge. And that's what, let's face it, that's what happened in the Gainesville case here in the state of Georgia. They filed in Gainesville, in the Gainesville district. You know, the Gainesville district, the Superior Court judge in Gainesville, who does he get elected by?
Gainesville.
People who live in Gainesville.
Yes.
This is certainly something that I have not thought about.
You think he wants to get reelected? I'm pretty sure he probably does. And I'm not saying that was the reason why, but put two and two together.
Yeah.
They won a court case there. And I mean, and then the GHSA you know, I know we're getting off track here, but the GHSA had no recourse. I mean, what are they going to do? Keep appealing, and we're not going to have the state championship games until March? They can't do that.
Go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne, Switzerland.
Absolutely.
Well, as always, my friend, I know you got some basketball to get
great
to.
Great takes, Matt. Yeah, thanks. So, got my brain a churning.
I know that we got you all dialed up and ready to go, but thanks, as always, for dropping by. We needed your expertise on this one.
I don't know how much expertise I gave you, but I gave you opinion, so there you go.
You gave us more than you think. It's always great to talk,
okay.
Matt.
All right, be good.
Great to talk to you guys, too.
All right. Half of the interview's down. Here comes the other half. Second half, we get the coach's perspective on National Signing Day Classic. I guess for lack of a better word, Joey King, the head coach at Carrollton, hanging out with us. Coach, thanks for dropping by on an important topic that I think is kind of at a crossroads, I think, right now.
Sure. Yeah, no, thank you for having me.
When you have now National Signing Day Classic, which used to be the original, this was the OG Signing Day. It was always a big deal. And now it is where you have all of the trickle-down effects of now what is the biggest one in December. You had 8 players sign on in the February window for National Signing Day. I think that's the largest number that I saw. How much of a challenge is it to, after December's done and Signing Day is done, to make sure that that momentum is still carried with those athletes that you're looking to place by February?
Well, I mean, for us, we're used to it, you know, especially if you grew up coaching with the February signing day. You know, I was coaching college ball back in the day when I first started this deal. My anniversary is February the 10th because that was the first Saturday after signing day that we had an opportunity to get married, you know.
Oh,
so everything was pushing toward the February signing day. So we're we're really used to it. The difference is just kind of the level of ball that happens. You know, usually those FBS guys now are signing early, and then everybody's hitting the transfer portal. And then after that, it's kind of, okay, we got to sign some high school kids and bring them in to develop. So the portal is really, you know, challenged us a little bit. But I'm a firm believer that if you want to play college football, there's always an opportunity out there for you. You just have to work a little harder to find it. And we've got a great staff that, you know, is very informed and educated on the process. I've got, I think, probably 5 or 6 guys on our staff that has coached college ball.
Wow.
So we've been on both sides of this fence, and I think that's very beneficial when it comes to an educational resource for our parents to educate the guys through the process of this crazy recruiting world.
Yeah, 19 of your 23 seniors signed, which was the most in any class that Carrollton's ever had. Would you give credit to those coaches, or what brought so much attention to your players?
I give credit to the kids, you know. I mean, we're glad to facilitate any way that we can. Playing at the level that we play at and in the spotlight that we're in, sometimes that brings a little bit more notoriety to it. The fact that our kids they're qualifiers, you know, they do well academically if they're coming from Carrollton, that helps. That helps greatly in this late window, because a lot of these schools that are signing kids, they're splitting scholarships up, right? If they're FCS, Division II, NAIA, they're trying to find any way they can to get money. So we make sure all of our kids have their FAFSA and their financial aid information filled out. We push them academically and hope their grade point average is high enough to get HOPE money if they're going into an in-state institution. But all of that stuff happens on the front end, and our staff does a great job of making sure that it does. You know, one of the things that can be a little tricky that we started doing here, we actually don't, now we put stuff out on social media, but we don't celebrate our February signees as a school until April, because the opportunity in February is really the first that you can sign. It doesn't say how late you can sign, and it doesn't have to be done on signing day. So especially with this second round of guys, what you see a lot of times, not for us this year, but what you'll see a lot of times is somebody rushing into some financial debt just to say they signed on, you know, quote unquote signing day. So they take the only opportunity that they may have and sign and, you know, commit to $20,000 a year worth of student loans just to say that they signed on signing day. So we look over all that paperwork, and we actually don't sign from a school standpoint until April, just to make sure all of the guys in this second window are in the best situation possible.
And you mentioned just how having those 5 coaches that have the college experience obviously help out in this. How much more attention to detail do you have to to lock into, because you know, an FCS program may sit there and say, yeah, we're interested. And then at the last minute, as you're getting closer to February, you know, and you get the rug pulled out from under you, then you've got to look at other things. How many different, you know, avenues of communication do you have to have or just be aware of when it comes to, okay, this might change, this is locked in, I don't know about this one? How much more nimble do you have to be?
Yeah, I think you do. And again, the number one characteristic of anybody as a human being, I believe, is their adaptability, right? So we've kind of seen both sides of the fence. We've had guys at the last second, a big school scoop in and sign them. You know, Cam Wood went to Liberty this past year, right? And then we've also had people carry them along through the process and drop them late in it. But we try to educate our parents and our kids too. Like at the end of the day, from a college coach's standpoint, it's a business. You know, and everything is business based for them. However, we preach all the time that it's relationship based. So if schools come in and treat our kids some type of way and don't communicate very well up front, then we'll remember those relationships down the road.
What's your take on the JUCO programs being kind of farm leagues now for bigger programs? How do you feel about that?
Well, I really, to be honest with you, I feel like JUCO, NAIA, Division II and FCS are all farm leagues now. Mm-hmm. You know, with the transfer portal being what it is, I mean, there's a lot of FCS programs that are recruiting kids saying, hey, you know, if you come here and you get on the field for 2 years and now you got quality film, you know, go to a bigger and better program. So, I mean, I feel like everything with the way that the portal is now kind of serves as a farm league for bigger and better opportunities. And it's crazy. It's a crazy world. But the good side of that is, you know, if a kid's got a dream of being a Power Five or Power Four, whatever it's called now, player, that dream's not dead just because they signed with a Division II school out of high school.
That is my take on that. Yes.
Yeah. So when I played ball, you know, it was, hey, if I played Division II ball, and if we had, you know, if I was all conference or an All American that first year, the only place I could transfer would be down without sitting out a year. You know, so the opportunity still exists and dreams are not dead and kids can continue to chase that and pursue that.
Just a real quick perspective on that, too. We're going to take this way back.
Uh-oh.
To 2007.
Uh-oh.
I was being recruited for volleyball. And like, this goes across all sports, not just football. And I'll never forget, I was being recruited by such small schools. And I didn't want to do that. I was like, no, I'd just rather not play. So I went to Ole Miss, hottie toddy. And shout out to your player going to Ole Miss, Dorian Barney.
Yeah,
yes,
that's right.
Going to Oxford. Anyways, I was like, I'm not even going to play. That's obviously different for a lot of people. But now you have these opportunities where it's not so looked down upon anymore. Like, oh, he's going to JUCO. Okay, well, that player, you could be seeing him on the SEC sideline in two seasons. Yeah. So yeah. I think that's a positive.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, we talk about two different types of recruitable kids. And when I was coaching college ball, it was the same way, you know. You got to, with recruiting, you got to figure out if the kid loves ball or if the kid loves recruiting. Mm-hmm. You know, if they just love recruiting, then that lure of those big schools falling off and they may just, you know, end it right there. But if they love ball and want to continue in that, there's a place for them to play. And then those opportunities are still not dead if they truly love it.
Yeah.
When it comes to the idea of, I guess, conditioning a student athlete of, okay, it's okay now these days to do it here for a year or do it for two, and then it's okay to move on to another place and all these different steps. Do you have these conversations where it's like, it's okay if you want to go someplace for 3 or 4 years and get an education and go that way, but now it's also okay to do one here, to do two here, to move to another one, because it is a business. Do you have those conversations? What are those like?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I still, there's a lot of value in loyalty, in my opinion, you know, and communicating things the right way. So yeah. If that was part of the process for a kid going into it, as long as they communicate and handle their business the right way, like a man should, I think there's no problem with it. It's the problem where a kid, well, maybe it's not good enough for me and I'm just trying to bounce from here to there. Those situations don't work out, you know, as often as you would hope. But what works out is if a kid goes and they excel and then that opportunity to move presents itself. I like seeing those stories. I don't like the, I'm going to bounce around every single year and just hope it works out. You know, I've always been the put your nose to the ground and keep on hoeing until the row is done kind of guy. But as long as they're loyal and they communicate things the right way and they're professionals, then I think it's okay.
When did this change? When did this switch get flipped in your mind? How many years ago did the approach change to where instead of it being a 3 or 4 year thing, you're going to spend 5 and be redshirted? When did this change for to the extent that it is right now about 1, maybe 2, or 1 and then over? When did this change?
Probably the time that I got out of coaching college ball, coming off the heels of that COVID year. I mean, I can vividly remember sitting in a staff meeting and the guy that presented said, you know, in 2 or 3 years, we're not going to be recruiting high school kids at this level. We're going to be recruiting high school kids agents. And before I knew what came out of my mouth, I said, not me, quite audibly. And Glenn Spencer, who's from the state of Georgia, he's retired, living in Montana right now. He got out of it too. But Glenn looked at me and said, you realize you said that out loud, right? So I would say I did not realize it at the time, but I would say probably on the tail end of that COVID year when a lot of this stuff, that's when it really started.
And now it's happening.
What did I say that in my out loud voice?
Yeah,
yes,
that's
you
exactly
did.
What it was.
Wow.
Yep, for sure.
Really quick before we let you go, and thanks for doing this, especially on a topic that is it's a hot button topic these days.
Sure.
Do you have your 10 games yet? For 26?
No, we're still looking for one. September 18th, on September 4th, we're going to Baton Rouge and playing Catholic High School out of
cool.
Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And it's an ordeal trying to find that one right in the middle of the year. I mean, I think it's us, Buford and Grayson that are looking, you know, and you have conversations with those guys. And it's like with the power system now, you know, we're going to end up playing them, hopefully playing them or, you know, the other team for a state championship or in the semifinals. So obviously you don't want to play in the middle of the year if you're going to end up playing them for a championship. So we're still looking for one more.
I was going to say Buford's looking too.
No doubt. Yeah. No, I've talked with all those guys and we're kind of all in the same boat. You know, you hate to, you know, meet in the middle of the year and then turn around and meet at the end of the year again.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Well, as always, Coach, it's great to catch up with you and pick your brain on these important topics. And the reason that we knocked on your door was because of the college experience and because of everyone knocking on your door to get the Carrollton student athlete out there these days. And thanks for being as open and honest as you were about this. And thanks for dropping by the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me, Hannah. Great to see you again.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you,
right.
Coach.
See ya.
Bye.
So, Matt, never fired up about any topic ever.
Never.
It's like literally Hannah just decided she's going to sit there and just go, psh, you know, and light a fire on
your
mat.
Oh, absolutely. I'll light the match all day.
And then, you know, having someone like Joey to come in, and like I said at the end of the interview, it was one of those reasons because of his college experience and his high school experience, now having to deal with the colleges now, being in high schools now, that was why we decided to dial up. We can't thank him enough for being a part of this.
Yeah, yeah. Coach King is family friend of the show.
Yes.
It's interesting. My brain has not been in football mode until this week because I'm back from maternity leave.
Third one.
But it's interesting Matt's take about the players that could just potentially play forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that wouldn't happen in football, such a physical sport. But like basketball, that's really interesting. I don't know if that's been discussed a whole lot, but. My brains are working on that.
You sit there and it's like, Michael Jordan comes back and plays for the Bulls or something.
But you would have to have you have to have eligibility. There has to be eligibility.
Yeah,
there has to be a
thing.
Length of eligibility.
Where does it go? But you could pursue a master's or you could pursue a PhD.
That's true. But you can't. It's true if you don't have your master's.
Yeah, if you don't have your master's.
But why haven't they done this before? Why now?
Because of the big business element that's attached to it. You could be making
money.
7 figures a year. Pursuing a master's degree, and oh, by the way, I'm a really good basketball player.
But the NIL's been around for 4 years now?
But not to this extent to where you're
kind
having...
of settling in.
Yeah, it's now... It is now being treated as a business decision each year.
Yep.
And one of the things that I've always tried to remind folks is an athletic scholarship is a one-year renewable thing. Mm-hmm. It has always been that way. It has not been a 4 or a 5 year thing. It is 1 year... And then we'll renew your contract, basically. We'll renew your scholarship. So this is just accelerating the idea behind an athletic scholarship on the college level, except that there are now a boatload of dollars attached to these economic decisions that are made on a year-by-year basis. And so when you see college hoppers, like a TJ Finley as an example, Zach Calzada, you have these skill position players going from one school to one school to one school to one school, and they're trying to max out their playing time so they can max out their NIL and show that they can be of value to this program.
But if this happens, then we're having a whole different recruiting conversation, because that's going to bog down everything. Then recruiting comes to a halt because no one's leaving programs.
Anyways,
it's interesting.
Yes. And so that's why Hannah decided that she wanted to tackle it for this particular show. All right.
Yes.
Other side of the glass. Let's see who's with us. It is, there goes Tokyo, Mark Chilla, King James. Let's see. Is that Goodwill Hunting in the back? Who's in the back? Who's in the back there with you, Ambassador Jeremy?
We've got an intern.
Oh, unknown intern.
Unknown intern.
Unknown intern.
Okay. Marky Mark.
Marky Mark. Yeah. King James, and there goes Tokyo, Mark Chilla, and Ambassador Jeremy, and the unknown intern. Did we get that right?
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. The UI.
Right. Good deal. Okay. So Hannah has given us a homework assignment that we are going to be tracking down.
What did I do?
Justin Rogers.
Oh, yes. We're calling Coach Rogers.
So like next month when we're doing basketball, in addition to basketball, we're going to be catching up. Justin Rogers, please pick up the red courtesy phone. Justin Rogers,
yes, we are
red
doing an additional podcast
phone
on the offseason now, talking
see,
to
all this
championship
extra
coaches
work that Hannah has assigned for us
this,
now,
this
Jeremy?
This comes out first. First of all, this wasn't my idea. I can't take credit for this. This was Jeremy, producer Jeremy's.
Ambassador Jeremy to you.
I don't know everyone's names. The nicknames. Ambassador Jeremy's idea. Mm-hmm. So in 2 weeks, our interview with Coach App will come out.
Right.
He's our first victim of the championship coach rundown.
You ain't kidding.
And then we're going to try to get Coach Rogers.
Right.
And then next month's podcast is basketball.
Basketball, because
basketball
we have the basketball. By the time we will have returned, we will have the basketball champs decided here on Georgia
Public
Broadcasting.
Okay, it's 2 o'clock.
And that means we got to go.
King James turns into a pumpkin.
Yes, he does. And so he's like sprinting out the door. We see his contrail heading out of the studio. So that means it's time to go. So for Marky Mark and Ambassador Jeremy and King James, and there goes Tokyo, Mark Chilla.
An unknown intern.
An unknown intern. She's back. You couldn't tell. That's Hannah. I'm John. Thanks for dropping by the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast. Thanks to Joey King. Thanks to Matt Stewart.
I'm just glad y'all allowed me back.
Well, the key card worked.
The
I don't
last
know about
couple podcasts before maternity leave were a little sketchy.
Because her key card didn't work. This is what happens when Hannah's not allowed in the building. Play it safe, everybody. Enjoy it. Basketball's up next. We'll catch up with you next month.
Brought to you by the Georgia Governor's Office of Highway Safety, reminding you to buckle up, Georgia.